This is the Create Your Own Life Show, episode 449, with Anthony Delgado of Disrupt Digital.
You're listening to the Create Your Own Life podcast, the show to help you create life on your terms. 3 days a week, Jeremy Ryan Slate interviews the most successful people in business and in life to help you create the life you want to create. Welcome to Life Creation Nation.
This episode is sponsored by Audible. I want to offer you guys a free book and a free month of Audible, and I want to tell you guys what I'm reading right now. I actually just finished Aaron Mankey's World of Lore book. He actually has two of them in this series, so you're definitely going to want to check those out if you're interested in anything weird, creepy, and a little bit historical. And if you haven't listened to the Lore podcast, or you have, this is the guy from that show, so you're going to want to head over to jeremyryanslate.com/book and pick up one of the two World of Lore books today. What is up, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Create Your Own Life Show. Guys, I'm really, really excited to be hanging out with you today, and we have a really cool guest with us today. His name is Anthony Delgado, and he's the founder of Disrupt Digital. And he's been in the online and internet space for a really long time. There's going to be a little bit of a segue here where we talk about how we actually had to log into Windows back in the day on our computers. So I had a lot of fun talking about that. But we also dive deeper into his bigger purpose. Because after the island of Puerto Rico was hit by a hurricane, he actually wanted to do something about it and help to bring not only recovery there, but business there as well. So we're going to have an amazing conversation about what he's actually doing to help the island of Puerto Rico and what he wants to do to help revitalize business and build a budding entrepreneur community there. So this is a really cool conversation. But before we dive into this one, I'll remind you guys to subscribe for free in Apple Podcasts or in Spotify so you don't miss another new episode of the show. And if you are loving the show, leave us a 5-star review and tell us about what the show has done for you. Guys, without further ado, let's get into this interview with Anthony Delgado. What's up, everybody? Jeremy here. And guys, I'm very stoked for today's guest because we actually got to hang out quite recently. And this guy is a total badass in the entire digital space and doing some really, really cool things that we're going to dive into today. Anthony Delgado is an American software developer and internet entrepreneur, widely known as a professional hacker in the developer community. Anthony has won numerous hackathons sponsored by Fortune 500 tech companies like Google, IBM, Intel, Facebook, and Microsoft, hosted by organizations including Rutgers University, the New Jersey Institute of Technology, and the AT&T Development Summit in New York City. You can find out more about him over at disrupt.digital. Welcome to the Create Your Own Life podcast, Anthony Delgado.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, brother. It's awesome to finally like get to sit down with you and do an interview. I know since we were just hanging out here locally in Jersey last week, right?
Yeah, totally. So yeah, we met up and we were with a couple of other podcasters and talking about the space and the reach. And it's really amazing to see like the community flourish, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know we're going to dive quite a bit into what you're actually doing in Puerto Rico as well today, too, which I find highly intriguing. But let's kind of just start at the beginning so all this makes sense for the people that don't have your backstory. What's your story, man?
Yeah, so I've been a software developer and serial entrepreneur for the last 10 years. I started out more as a digital marketer and like digital entrepreneur by trade. And I saw coding as just a tool to do marketing. I saw coding as a tool to make money online. And like a lot of people, I started out, like selling things on eBay when I turned 18 and selling things on Amazon and doing e-commerce. And I quickly realized that I could generate full-time income without the requirement of like being part of a 9-to-5 job. And this was, like I said, about over 10 years ago now. And it was before entrepreneurship was cool.
You're dating yourself, man. You were cool before it was cool, brother.
Yeah, it was a little bit before like the Gary Vaynerchuk. I think Gary was still like selling wine and I think it was before he hired the personal trainer. but I'm a little younger than Gary. And a little older than Casey Adams, but somewhere in the middle there. But yeah, I mean, I grew up a child of the internet. I had my first computer when I was in second grade. My mother was a programmer before the internet. So, you know, we were the first kids on the block with AOL and dial-up and CompuServe and all that fun stuff. And, you know, the first times.
So you remember the days when you had to, like, at the MS-DOS prompt type WIN to get into Windows. I'm sure you remember those days.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my first computer was a DOS computer. There actually was no Windows with my first computer. Yeah. It was just DOS. And like you would open up a file and like save it and put a password on it. And I thought I was a hacker because I could do that. And yeah, man, but I grew up in this evolution. So, you know, there's some people who, you know, like some of the younger millennials that it's just ubiquitous to them. And they grew up in the iPhone, you know, they had the iPhone when they were 5 years old. I remember when the iPhone came out and I was maybe 18. So it's a little bit of a difference in perspective to kind of watch the online and digital space evolve.
Well, let me ask you about that then before we dive too much deeper into that, because I know you and I are pretty much like almost the exact same age. So we've kind of seen, like, you know, back from the days when you used to, you know, play Oregon Trail and things like that. So I'm just kind of interested to see what you believe the difference is between, you know, like our generation that like grew up as this stuff was developing versus, I guess, you know, the next generation that's never had anything but this.
So I think the general... one of the general differences is just understanding the fundamentals of computing, right? And when I say that, that's a fancy way to say just the basics, right? So like a folder, you know, if you grew up with an iPhone, you don't know that there's a folder structure and where to put files and how to name files and what file extensions mean, right? And, you know, when we were growing up, that didn't make you a hacker. That didn't make you a technical person. That just means you owned a computer.
Right.
And and now, you know, with kind of Android and iPhone and the whole mobile revolution, I feel like digitally we've been babied a little bit to the fact that, you know, you have no idea how these things work. You sign into them and, you know, you don't know what a file extension is. So I think that's one of the big differences.
Do you feel like that affects how you solve problems? Like maybe we solve problems a bit differently than I guess somebody that's had it their whole life solves a problem?
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like playing, going bowling with the dividers so that you can never get a gutter bowl. So you know, when you're using an iPhone and, you know, the only apps you can download are from the store, your mind naturally thinks, hey, there's only so many things I can do. I can only get my music from iTunes, for example, is like a simple thing. And, you know, the people that grew up in my generation, I mean, there wasn't iTunes. You couldn't buy the stuff if you wanted to.
Right.
And when iTunes came out, that was like revolutionary. But at that time, you couldn't buy the stuff digitally if you wanted to, and you had to like pirate stuff. So like Napster and, you know, the Pirate Bay and LimeWire and all of those evolutions, you know, those things were mainstream. It wasn't, you weren't a hacker if you downloaded torrents. It was like everyone in the dorm room, you know, was using Napster and LimeWire.
It's thanks to torrents. I used to have an iPod Classic that had like 13,000 songs on the thing.
yeah, totally. Well, the first iPhone too was it was an iPod Touch, right? It was an iPod Touch, and then they added, you know, a cell phone to it. So it's
so then I guess I took us on a little bit of a tangent, but you know, you've had the ability to do a lot of this digital stuff from a very young age, and then, you know, I guess kind of connect that to, you know, how that brings us through the rest of your journey.
Yeah, totally. So started out like a digital entrepreneur, selling things on eBay and Amazon. And then in 2007, 2008, right around the Obama election, I sold my first company. It was a brick and mortar retail store. And at the time I was doing a mixture between e-commerce and then in-person sales. And I just realized that there was a huge potential for online and e-commerce. So I sold my first business, took the proceeds, invested, went all in online, and then started learning to code like for real. So now not MySpace layouts, we're talking about like databases and
MySpace.
Well, yeah, I think again,
I remember
I'm dating
those,
myself.
Man. You used to have like that thing on your MySpace profile where it had your like not just your eight friends that you were friends with, but they were your top friends and everybody competed for that shit. No, oh my God. Anyway.
There was a lot of drama. I think there was a lot of drama that happened over that top eight, you know. You'd go on your friend's profile and say, oh, dude, you took me off the top eight. Yeah.
I really hope somebody out there in the audience actually understands what we're talking about. You know, back in the days before people actually used Facebook. Anyway, so you were doing something more than MySpace layouts at this point in time.
Yeah, definitely. And I started a competitor to eBay because I was selling things on eBay and there were a lot of fees and, you know, I was dealing with like account suspensions and all sorts of stuff. And that was my first digital startup. It was a competitor to eBay. It was called Ibanza. Company lasted for about 2 years. We kind of had stores similar to like Shopify, and this was before Shopify, and ran that for a while. And then I realized that you could make money digitally from advertising. And I started dabbling in Google AdSense. So the first month I probably made $4. And in order for Google to actually send you the check, you had to generate $20. So that was my goal. I was like, all right, well, how many articles do I have to write? And how many ads do I have to show to generate $20? And, you know, I overshot that. I made like 90 the first month and then 400 and 300 and 1,000. And then before you knew it, I was generating six-figure income from online advertising.
And that's pretty substantial, man, to like start it that small and just kind of scale it up like that.
Yeah. No, it was very substantial. And it was honestly at the brink of digital media. So this was before CNN and New York Times and, you know, the Source magazine, XXL. It was before all these magazines started taking digital seriously. And I remember going to some of these magazines' websites and it would just say, like, fill out this form to sign up for our magazine and we will send it to you in the mail. Like, that was literally their website. So we would create these sites. And, you know, I think at my peak, I probably had about 20 different news sites in all these different niches. And the biggest one was called unreleasedhiphop.com, and it focused all on, like, hip-hop and unreleased stuff. And I remember going to, like, my competitors' websites, and they weren't even competing. So we would throw up a site, we would do articles, and they would get indexed in Google. And if you typed into Google Chris Brown, for example, my site would come up on the first page. And it was similar for a lot of artists. So, you know, we ended up getting early access to a lot of tracks. We got on like a mailing list where we would get sent music early before it came out. We got invited to like album release parties. We went to Chris Brown's album release party. We went to the Beats by Dre store when it opened up in Soho, and that was actually before Apple bought the company. Wow. They opened like their first brick and mortar store, and we went backstage to that. But it was really amazing. It was a different time. It was a time when the digital playground was still wide open, and there wasn't all this corporate oversight as there is now.
So was this like kind of before or like, I guess, in the midst of when Gerard started Elite Daily?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So it's a similar space. And that's part of the reason why I think me and him get along, because we come from that kind of content marketing, digital entrepreneurial space. So another one of my publications was called Hype Eater, and it was probably something similar to like an Elite Daily, where we talked more about culture and things of that nature.
So I guess my question would be then, like, as you know, digital starts morphing and changing, how does that affect, I guess, your career trajectory? Because I think it's really interesting as well to take a look at that, because I don't think we've ever really taken a look at how, you know, somebody's career has changed in digital, because a lot of the things that I was doing 3 years ago, you were doing 5 years ago, you can't do that stuff anymore.
Well, yeah, I think the game changes, but the rules stay the same. So, you know, I mean, first and foremost, one of the most important things you can do in digital is actually have the ability to unlearn things. So the thing that I've noticed is things are moving so fast, the rules keep changing, they keep changing. So you have to be able to kind of unlearn some things and then apply them in new spaces. So the text revolution, as we might call it, was when all these magazines were now going online. And that Elite Daily phase, that Unreleased Hip Hop phase, that wave from like, I want to say 2008 till 2012, 2013, that was a certain wave where every single print publication realized, oh shit, we need to go online. I can curse on this, right?
Oh, you absolutely can.
Okay, good. So, you know, so all these publishers woke up and they were like, okay, we need to go online. Now, with the advent of 4G internet and 5G and broadband and fiber and Fios, the internet is super, super fast. The same thing is happening with audio and video. So that same wave is happening, but it's just happening in with a different medium. At that time, you know, phones were still 2G, 3G was starting to emerge and come out. Dial-up was kind of, it was faster. It was like DSL and maybe a cable modem. But now our internet's so fast, we can like live stream the soccer game. Like, you know, a buddy of mine, we were at his house the other day, and they were live streaming the soccer game on all different devices in all different rooms. Like,
wow.
Two flat screens are streaming it. One kid has a laptop, another kid's watching it on his phone, you know, and you just couldn't do that. The internet wasn't fast enough to do that 10 years ago. Now it is. So the same gold rush for market share that happened in the text and article space is now happening in the video and audio space.
So how has that, I guess, affected the trajectory of your career?
Yeah, so like pretty much whether I like it or not, this wave of video and audio has been upon us. So at the you mentioned Gerard, so the company I was at before I started Disrupt was called Founders, and it was an online kind of like Netflix for entrepreneurs was a term that I coined, but it was still is a online video platform. And for $20 a month, $27 a month, you get you unlock all of these hours of video content. And every single content creator, podcaster, influencer, thought leader in the space now has the ability to create video. The barrier to entry keeps going lower and lower. Everyone's smartphone has a 4G camera, so there's really no excuse. A lot of people say, oh, I need a camera guy. Like, yeah, no, you don't. You can literally take your phone, you can literally take your webcam on your laptop, and you can start creating video content. And it's the same thing with audio. I got to send you over our media deck for Disrupt, but we have a lot of stats on there about how everyone who is under 65 is watching less and less TV. Yeah. And the only demographic where TV, traditional television watching is going up is in the, you know, the senior population. But every single young person, even, you know, young, and I'll put air quotes, you know, 45-year-olds, they're watching less and less television. They're watching things on either smart televisions, you know, video on demand, Netflix, YouTube, and then most people are watching things on their phone.
Well, that's, I think, one of the things you and I were previously talking about is I don't have cable or satellite or anything else. We just, you know, I watch superhero shows on Netflix. That's about it.
Well, the crazy thing is I've actually been living my life like that for about the last 10 years. So when I'm talking about, in 2008, like I was like that even in 2008, I was like torrenting movies and watching Hulu. Actually they were the first company to come out with a really robust app for I guess now the term is called lean back consumption. So where you're just up, down, left, right, arrows, like on a couch, kind of surfing the catalog. And Hulu Desktop was the first ones with it. So I had like a big computer rig, like 8 gigs of RAM, which was a lot at the time, plugged into my flat screen television. And we were just all video on demand, all streaming. We streamed the Super Bowl in, I think it was 2012, was the first year that the Super Bowl was available to be streamed legally. So I remember the year before we still streamed it, but it was like some Russian site that was like choppy and bad quality. And then the next year, it came out and it was the Giants Super Bowl. And I remember because they won and because it was on my birthday. And it was the Giants Super Bowl and they actually won the Super Bowl. And I think the reason they won is because they streamed it over the internet.
Was that the helmet catch? Was that Super Bowl?
I think so.
the David Tyree helmet catch. Wow. Very cool. So I guess my question, my not question, but I guess the thing I'd be trying to lead this into then is now, what are you doing modernly in the space with Disrupt?
So Disrupt is a media company. So we believe that technology and entrepreneurship and innovation can change the world. And Disrupt was born in Puerto Rico. It was born out of this mission for Puerto Rico. So I'll backtrack and I'll give a little bit of...
Yeah, let's backtrack of that so we get some context.
Yeah, sure. So when Hurricane Maria first happened, me and a buddy of mine, we bought a pallet of water and we put it on a shipping container to get it sent out. And then we patted ourselves on the back and we were like, cool, mission accomplished, right? And, you know, we went back to our jobs and our lives. And, you know, a few months later, come to find out that 50% of the island still didn't have any power. So I met a gentleman named David, and he has a tourism company. And when the hurricane happened, his for-profit business transformed into a nonprofit. And the same trucks that he used to as a tour guide, he started using to do relief efforts. So I met him in January, and he starts telling me about the problems that are still on the island. And I invite him out the next night, and we go to a diner, and we start talking about, you know, how can we have a positive impact against all these problems. So the first one he brings up is energy and the grid. 50% of the grid was still down at that time. And I'm like, all right, well, let's solar panels. Like, there's tons of energy there. Let's get some solar panels going on. So we partnered up with a company called Power for PR. Good friend of mine owns it. His name's Hugo Sanchez. He has another amazing app called Modi. And we basically went down there and gave away 300 solar panel lights, food, and water and supplies. But let me backtrack. So we're still in the diner and we're talking about it. And the next problem that he brings up is the economy. And the second biggest industry on the island of Puerto Rico is the service economy. So this is tourism and leisure, drinks and alcohol and room service and hotels and resorts. And obviously it's a beautiful place. But one of the problems is that there are no other options for people that that are looking for upward mobility. So there's a big university there. It's called Puerto Rico University. And even the kids that go there and study and get master's degrees, there's a very limited amount of white collar jobs. There's some banking jobs, there's some government jobs, but they're few and far between. And similar to the United States, but even on a worse scale, if you're not highly connected, it's actually hard to get these types of jobs. So people will go to school, they'll get a degree, they'll have some student debt the way they do in the United States. But then their only option is either to work in a resort, right? Oh, I speak a good enough English because I went to college for 8 years, I can work in a resort. Like, no, I'm sorry.
Wow.
There's better options. Yeah. And then the only other option is to move to the United States. So my cousin, who I reconnected with after 20 years, he lives in Texas now. He was born and raised in Puerto Rico. He went to the Puerto Rico University. He got out of school and he wanted to make a income for himself and his family. So he had to move. He had to move to Texas. And, you know, we really feel that that technology and entrepreneurship can transform the island of Puerto Rico into, you know, the next India, the next Ukraine, the next Philippines, the next Silicon Valley, if you will, you know, the Tokyo of the Caribbean, if you will. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just so many advantages. And I really think it's a mindset change that has to happen. You know, it's 3 hours away from New York on a plane. They take American currency. You don't need a passport to go there. It's part of the United States. They speak English. They teach English in all the schools. And there's just all these different advantages. There's a bunch of tax incentives, which we can talk about later too. But there's just all these incentives for it to become this tech hub. And I really think that what is required is a mindset change. So again, so we're back in the diner, we're talking about this, and we come up with the idea to start a coding school. Like, dude, start a coding boot camp. We'll start teaching people how to code. You know, they'll be able to support themselves, right? Create financial freedom for themselves. And we come up with the concept to combine an education with a vacation. Mm-hmm. So marketing the school to Americans who want to get a vacation, right? And instead of taking a coding boot camp in New York where there's pigeons and it's cold, come down to Puerto Rico, right? Sip a piña colada.
I love how pigeons is the one thing you pull out, not the homeless people pissing all over the sidewalk. Anyway.
This episode is brought to you by Assistagram.us. If you guys have not heard previous interview on this show with Zach Benson of Assistagram.us, I've had some amazing help from him the last couple months in being stuck at about 16,000 in my Instagram following. And if you really want to create a lot of traffic for the show like I have done a lot of it through Instagram, working with Zach has been amazing, guys, over to systagram.us. He's helped me go from that 16,000 to where we were stuck to now 23,600. And he's doing some cool stuff over there. We have he has somebody on his team that's managing my account, so doing posting for me and posting at the correct times of the day and posting the correct type of content, working with the correct type of accounts, shout-outs, all that kind of stuff. And I don't have to do it because Assistagram has been doing it for me. You do see some of my posts over there every so often, but it's great to have them doing that and helping me grow that account by not really having to have my attention on it. Because as a busy entrepreneur, we end up doing so many different things that I really don't have time to sit and remember to post on Instagram since I can't really schedule things. So guys, you can check them out over at assistagram.us, and there'll be a link in the show notes to this episode as well, but assistagram.us.
You know, come to Puerto Rico where there's palm trees and there's a pina colada. And, you know, and then we create these excursions where you jump off of a waterfall and you have an amazing time as well. So it's not only is it educational, but it's transformational because, you know, you're going to be inspired by the natural surroundings. So we come up with this concept. We're still sitting in a diner and David looks at me and he says, okay, great. When are you coming? Mm-hmm. And I really got to thank him for that because he stuck to his guns and he constantly, even after that, he left a few days later. He kept back and forth texting me and when are you coming? When are you coming? So 2 or 3 days later, I book a one-way ticket. And every single day up until the day that I left, I convinced another friend or stranger to come with me to the island of Puerto Rico. And I actually equate it. And if I come off sounding pompous, I apologize. It's not my intention. But the mindset that I equate this journey, this pilgrimage to is the mindset of Gandhi. Mm. So Gandhi took responsibility for every single human being that lived in the country of India. And India has 3.5 billion people who live in that country. It's a lot of people, and it's a really big place. It's one of the largest markets in the world. And you know, coming off of that story and knowing that Gandhi was able to do that, I looked at Puerto Rico and I was like, well, it's so small. Right. It's this little island, right? And there's only 3 million instead of 3 billion. And I was like, why can't I be responsible for transforming this island's economy? And now that doesn't mean that I'm going to do it alone. I have tons of partners and people that we work with and collaborations that we've done to help make that happen. But why can't I make it my mission in life? The reason that I live and die for, to help transform the 3 million lives of the men and women that live there and create a digital economy and teach the skills that I learned to create financial freedom in my own life, teach those skills to Puerto Rico. So that's what I decided to do. So I made the decision to do that back in January. I had no idea how I was going to do that. And to be honest with you, I still don't, right? I'm still figuring things out. I have a lot of plans and we've made a lot of headway, but I don't have it all figured out. But I went to an event similar to Tony Robbins. The guy's name is David Bayer. It's another David. And it was a mindset event.
David's a Founders guy too, isn't he?
So that's how I met David. I met David at Founders. He came to speak at Founders. Some of his videos are on the Founders platform. And then he gave us free tickets to go to his big mastermind event in Orlando, Florida. So me and a buddy of mine, Fernando, we went out there and dude, it was an amazing event. Like, I didn't know how good the event was. We had quite a few free tickets. We didn't use all of them. And if I would have known how amazing this event was, I would have forced everyone that I know to go with me. I just thought, oh, cool, it's an event. Like, it'll be fun. We'll meet some people. No, like, this event really changed my mindset in a major way.
Wow.
And one of the things that he spoke about was decisions, right? So he was saying when you want to do something in life, people think you have to know the how right away. And he was like, no, that's wrong. He was like, you have to decide that you're going to do it. And He used the example of marriage. He was like, when you get married to someone, you have no idea what the next 50 years are going to be like, but you make that decision. You say, I decide that through thick and thin, from death do us part, through hell and high water, we're going to be married and I'm going to make this commitment, right? And you have no idea what's going to go on. It's the same thing in business. Mm-hmm. When you decide you want to create this huge enterprise like Microsoft, do you think Bill Gates knew every single turn? Do you think had a crystal ball and said, oh, I'm going to come out with the Windows phone and the Zoom? And no, of course not. And so, you know, making that decision and then letting the chips fall where they may. So I made the decision. I'm going to Puerto Rico. I'm taking responsibility for transforming the island. And I convinced friends and strangers to go with me. And one of the people that I really just want to acknowledge is a man named Emmanuel Rodriguez. So he's a very talented videographer and content creator. And he reached out to me 2 days before we were going to Puerto Rico. And at that time, I was looking for videographers because I did want to capture what we were doing. And even though I'm in Founders, I know all these guys, these really dope guys, none of the people I knew were available. One guy was going to South America already. Another guy was in LA. Like, no one was available for this trip. And at that time, I hadn't made it public that we were going. So I get a direct message from Manny, and he tells me, hi, my name is Manny, and I'm a video creator, and if you ever need any photos, photography, like, let me know. So for a second I read it to myself in that same semi-mocking voice, and I'm like, oh, here we go, another solicitation, another sales solicitation.
Don't feel bad, man, I do the exact same.
and then all of a sudden it hit me, and halfway through the message I was like, oh my god, the universe is giving me the videographer that I asked for. And so I reply to him. And I say, I didn't say, hi, how you doing? Can I see a price sheet? I said, are you willing to go to Puerto Rico in the next 2 days? like, let's cut to the chase here, right?
And that's like, instead of you know, asking for the first date, being like, so let's get married. How's that sound?
Yeah, would you like to marry me, right? And I almost am that type of guy. I think I may have said that on a first date before. That's probably why I didn't get a call back. But... So I cut straight to the chase, right? We talk once over the phone, and basically I'm on the phone with him. I'm like, listen, do you want to come? If you do, let me know. Let me get your full name so I can put it in this plane ticket and we can go. And so we met for the first time 1 hour before the plane took off. And we went to Puerto Rico. We created a documentary about our experience. We went to all different cities and villages all throughout the island. We jumped off of a waterfall. We went snorkeling. I mean, it wasn't all humanitarian work. We did about 50% humanitarian work and then 50% exploring the island and just seeing these beautiful parts. And David really, and this isn't David Bayer now, this is Puerto Rican David. David really helped us fall in love with the island, and that's what he does. His tourism company, it's called I Got Tours PR on Instagram. He really shows you Puerto Rico like a native. So one of the places we went was called the White House, Casa Blanco. And it literally looks like a Puerto Rican version of the White House.
Really?
It's a restaurant where they grow the food on the roof. And there's a giant tree that goes through the middle of the building. And it was just amazing. It was like almost like a Roman castle. So he took us there for lunch, for example. He took us to a waterfall in the middle of the rainforest, which was amazing. I jumped off a waterfall for the first time. He took us to what's called the bioluminescent bay. You have to come with me next time to this place.
You're good at selling this thing, man.
Well, that's my job.
I'm already buying. You're selling. I'm buying anyway.
You're already booking your ticket, right? So this place is called the bioluminescent bay, and the water glows in the dark. So when you touch the water, so picture this: we're at a sand bay in the middle of the ocean, about 2 miles offshore, and we're sitting in water that's maybe 3 feet deep, mm-hmm. and we're watching the sunset. And then as soon as the sun sets and it's pitch dark, we get back on the boat and we drive into the middle of darkness in the middle of the ocean. And all of a sudden, as we're driving in the boat, we start seeing what look like little fireflies popping up in the water. And it's pitch dark, and all you see is the stars, and now the water has these little lights. And all of a sudden, from the back of the boat where the water starts glowing. And not all of the water, just the water that's coming out of the engine. And then we stop in the middle of the water, and when you touch the water and you put your hand in, the water glows, and it's activated by touch.
Wow.
So we jump in the water, and we have goggles on, and our whole bodies are luminescent. And it's like a million little lights. Have you ever seen the movie Avatar?
Yeah.
So think of it. It was like that in real life.
Wow.
And I never felt so connected to life. I never felt so connected as a human being. And if I hadn't already fell in love with the island of Puerto Rico, like, that really sealed the deal for me.
I got to say, man, like, I think the island of Jamaica needs to stop running those stupid Bob Marley One Love commercials and just hire you, apparently.
Totally.
So you fell in love with the island, but then, you know, I guess where does it go from there, man? Like, what does the picture look like?
Yeah, so the island's biggest struggle right now is the economy. But out of all the other islands that are in the Caribbean, and you mentioned Jamaica as one of them, Puerto Rico has the strongest infrastructure and the strongest internet connection. So as soon as you touch down, your phone is not on roaming. It's part of the United States, so similar to going to like Hawaii. And if you have AT&T, they're the strongest carrier there. They have 4G everywhere. And so there's a friend of mine. His name is Blockchain Ray. He's a big blockchain investor.
It's a good name.
You can look him up. Yeah, it's a good name. You can look him up on Instagram. But me and Ray went to the island a month later to go to the cryptocurrency conference out there called Porto Crypto. And, you know, the reason why Blockchain Ray, who originally is from Jamaica, is actually looking to invest in Puerto Rico is because the infrastructure in Jamaica just isn't ready. But in Puerto Rico, you have this strong internet. You have, you know, the roads are very developed. You know, you feel like you're in America, for all intents and purposes, except you're surrounded by all this natural beauty. So, but like I said, the economy right now, it's the service economy. It's this economy that's based on servitude. And, you know, I don't know about you, but all the Puerto Ricans that I know from New York, they're bosses. They're entrepreneurs. They own businesses. They do a lot of things.
Yeah, seriously.
So
they're very, very quiet people, right?
Well, is that a joke?
I'm being sarcastic. Come on, every Puerto Rican I've ever met, man, is large and in charge.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I'm probably the quietest one, and I'm pretty loud myself. So you know, to go down there and kind of see this alternate reality in my mind of, you know, having people not have any upward mobility and having, you know, the best thing that they can aspire to do is like be in the service industry. It's not cool. So we feel that by teaching coding on the island of Puerto Rico, we can create this digital economy and create upward mobility. So we're starting a school. The name of the school is the Caribbean Institute of Technology. And we teach skills that aren't necessarily even taught in universities. So there's an educational problem all around the country and really all around the world right now. There's a huge skills gap, and there's more people that want to build things than there are people that know how to build them. And I know you're in like the startup space, so you know those guys,
well,
right?
It's that, and then also there's also the problem of, you know, like myself, I'm somebody that I studied in Europe, I have a master's degree, all this stuff, but it's like it's not usable data. You know what I mean? It's just consumable data, and I think that's part of the issue as well, is that we're not coming out able to like do something with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you have to learn how to learn, right? So I attended Rutgers Coding Bootcamp, and the first day they were like, "We're going to teach you how to learn. You're going
to
learn."
I'm sorry,
how to
man.
Learn.
I'm sorry, man. This interview's over. You went to Rutgers anyway. I'm a Seton Hall graduate, so I can't say much.
Oh boy.
Anyway, continue.
But yeah, on day one they were like, "Hey, we're gonna teach you how to learn. You're gonna learn how to learn," and we're going to teach you how to use Google, and we're going to teach you Google Fu, like Kung Fu. And I was like, oh, great. I just spent 10 grand to learn how to use Google. But it really is, you know, pointing people in the right direction and giving them the tools to actually think. And I feel like traditional education was designed for factory workers. And as the economy moves towards automation, all of those factory worker jobs are going to be automated. And we really need people that can think outside of the box. And traditional academia just doesn't deliver in that aspect, I don't think.
So then I guess, where are you guys at in your process of making this happen? And because this is really, like, this has been a really enthralling, I guess, journey to creating this. So where do we stand, I guess, in making this a reality, man?
So we're throwing a huge event. The name of the event is Disrupt Puerto Rico, and then it's also accompanied by a hackathon called Hack Puerto Rico, and we're bringing together developers, cryptocurrency enthusiasts, people from the legalized cannabis space, because cannabis is actually legal in Puerto Rico, entrepreneurs, people from the AI space, and people from Silicon Valley, and we're bringing all of these great kind of like the best of the best, I want to say, together onto the island for a giant conference, convention, and then party. We're going to have a VIP after party on a boat. And we're bringing them to this event on September 19th on the anniversary of Hurricane Maria. So it's 1 year later. The power's back on, thankfully. And now it's like, how do we rebuild from here? So we're having this huge event. We're getting tons of sponsors. And then the nice thing about becoming a sponsor is not only are you sponsoring the event and getting publicity, but all of the proceeds go towards funding the first version of the school. So the pilot program is going to be funded completely by the proceeds of this convention. And we came up across that for a number of different ways. One of them was just practicality. So the bureaucracy of big companies like Google, like Microsoft, who they've sponsored events of ours in the past. They've sponsored hackathons and tech events from us in the past. They don't have an apparatus to do philanthropic work. And even when they do, it's a much more drawn out bureaucratic process. So if I go to Google and I say, hey, listen, I want to start this school. I'm looking for an investment. They can send me to Google VC, right? Google Ventures. Or if I say, hey, I'm trying to start this school and I'm looking for a grant. Okay, they can send me to their grants department. Again, a multi-year process to get a grant. But if I go to them and I say, hey, I want to do a hackathon, their process in funding hackathons and conferences is actually a lot quicker. So we're throwing this huge event. All of the proceeds are going to go towards funding the first version of the school. And the first class is going to be held on October 1st. So it's going to be like right after the event.
Very cool. Very cool. And we'll have all that linked up in the show notes as well. But just before we run low on time here, Anthony, I want to come back to you a little bit, because this has been like almost like a flow of consciousness, I feel like, of this kind of going through this whole thing. And I'm just very, very intrigued. But before we run out of time, I want to kind of just, you know, come back to you a little bit. And what's one thing that I guess you believed at 21 that you don't believe now?
That there's limits. So, you know, when I grew up in an urban environment. You know, I have friends of mine who are dead. I have other friends who are responsible for their deaths. I have friends who are in jail doing 18 years for those crimes. Friends that are hooked on drugs and gangs. You name it. You know, I have some friends that are on Wall Street too and did very well. But I really grew up in an urban environment where you were told where your limits were. And, you know, I had a fourth grade teacher who told us that we were going to be junkies when we grew up.
Wow.
And I don't know about you, but
fire his or her ass, man.
Yeah, no, seriously. I don't wish bad on anyone, but that's some deep shit to put on a fourth grader.
Seriously.
And, yeah, so, you know, the public school system, you know, it was hit or miss, you know, Bill Clinton came and gave everyone at the school computers and gave everyone Macs. So that was nice. But throughout that process, there was a lot of bureaucracy. You know, I went to a shitty state school. I went to Ramapo and actually got kicked out in the first year. And I didn't even, like, it wasn't even on my mind to go to Harvard. It wasn't even on my mind to go to MIT, you know. And a lot of that was just, like, you know, mindset. Like, if it was me, I only applied to one school. So let me backtrack to the whole going to college thing. I applied to one school and I got in, and I was told by my guidance counselor, apply to this one shitty state school. This is the shitty state school that everybody gets in. There's other teachers here that have been there. It's fucking great. Here's the average path. Please follow this average path.
Wow. Right?
And meanwhile, I was not an average kid. I aced my SATs. My SAT scores were the highest in my entire school. And I was actually a little hungover, I think, when I took them. I won the science fair numerous times. I was in honors programs. I used to test out of our math class in high school. And so I would show up on the first day of math. I would say, math is too easy for me. Can I please go see the principal? And I would request that the principal let me take the final. And I would do that, and then I would have a free period. Like, I was not an average kid. So I am scared to see what they were telling the other kids that were, you know, average or below average. They were probably telling them to drop out and go work at McDonald's, right? But, you know, the path that was put before me was, hey, go to this average school. If it was me now, I would have applied to every Ivy League school. I would have applied to NYU. I would have applied to Columbia, to MIT, to Stanford. I would apply to all of them. What do I have to lose, mm-hmm. right? And even if I wouldn't have gotten to an Ivy League school, at least I would have gotten to a dope school. You know, there's these dope kind of non-Ivy but still really good, like NYU type of schools. And instead of that, I went to like shitty liberal arts college that everyone recommended us. So I just use that as one example of many where, you know, now I compare myself to Gandhi, right? I compare myself to anyone, you know. We were backstage at the Synergy Global Conference.
Ah, the one in Newark.
No. Synergy was in New York City.
Oh, I'm thinking of Voice. Never mind.
Yeah, no. This was last year. So we're backstage at the Synergy Global Conference, and Gary Vaynerchuk spoke, Gerard spoke, Richard Branson, like a lot of really influential people spoke, and Steve Forbes was backstage. And so we're all backstage, and I'm with Steve Forbes, and we're in like a little circle huddle, and people are kind of asking him questions and chatting, and My friend Fernando is next to me, and he's like, dude, do you know who the fuck that is? That's Steve Forbes. And I'm like, okay, dude, all right, Forbes, I got it. He has some money in the bank. Like, cool. You know, and I think, and, you know, Fernando's a lot younger than me. And I think that is probably my difference in mindset. Like, when I was 18, when I was 21, you know, I would see someone who was influential on that level, and I might get a little schoolgirlish. And now I just realize the fact that we're all human, where we all, our hearts are going to stop one day. And the only thing that we have is today. And, you know, so I know that I have 24 hours in the day, same 24 hours as Oprah or Tony Robbins or anyone else that I admire. And I have the possibility and the potential to reach all those heights. Whereas, you know, I used to think there was some special sauce, or they had it figured out, or they had some plan that I didn't have. And now I know the only difference between success and failure is just hard work and perseverance.
Absolutely. Well, Anthony, just as we wind down here, if we had to take a look at everything you've created in your career, we're far in the future, and we can sum that up with a quote in your tombstone. What does that look like, man?
Quote on my tombstone. That's deep. It's super, super deep. I don't even want to think about having a tombstone ever, because I'm going to live forever. I would say be relentless, man. Be relentless. And I love thy neighbor. I mean, I think that those would be the two mantras. And they might be a little contradictive, but I think be relentless in your life and your passions, and just have compassion for other people.
Very cool. Well, I really appreciate you hanging out with us today. For those people listening, if they want to connect with you, if they want to learn more, where is the best place to go?
So you can just go to my website. It's anthonydelgado.me, and you can shoot me an email, me@anthonydelgado.me, and be sure to check out our site, disrupt.digital, for startup and tech news.
Very cool. Well, Anthony Delgado, thank you so much for hanging out with me today on the Create Your Own Life podcast.
Absolutely, brother. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Hey guys, thanks for hanging out with me and Anthony today. You can check him out over at anthonydelgado.com, or you can check him out at disrupt.digital. And guys, as always, you can get the show notes for this episode over at jeremyryanslate.com/449. Also, don't forget to subscribe for free in Apple Podcasts or in Spotify. And while you're over there, if you are loving this show, leave us a 5-star review and tell us how it's going. Without further ado, guys, enjoy the rest of your day. Rock on, and I'll catch you on Friday.
Now go out there and create your own life. Motivation may be great, but action is better. Get it done, my friends.